Hello, I'm Floyd Miller, the host of It's Everything West Texas, and I mean everything. Some of our topics are going to make you laugh, and some will make you cry. I guarantee you all of them will make you think. It is the podcast that highlights people and issues in West Texas. As a neighbor, we want to talk with you. The goal is not necessarily to get agreement, but it is about understanding. Subscribe today and never miss another podcast.
Hello, my name is Floyd Miller, and I am the host of It's Everything West Texas. And as you know, we try to bring you programs that are educational, uplifting, and of value. And today we have one of those programs. We have a local individual from the Abilene community in the studios today. Her name is Stephanie Ellison, and I've been watching and looking on social media, so many of you may already know her. She is the author of a children's book, Always Forever. She's married. She has a family, and from the things that I can read, it seemed like it's a very happy family. A good family, but I think we're going to find out today that it was not always that way. Welcome to the podcast, Stephanie.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
Well, I'm happy to have you here today. I've heard a little bit about your story, but first I would like for you to just tell us a little about yourself, whatever you feel comfortable talking about, and then we'll get deeper into your story a little later.
Absolutely. Well, I moved to West Texas in 2003 to attend Hardin-Simmons University. I am a first-generation college student and high school graduate. I graduated from Burleson High School, but I moved around a whole lot growing up, so I went to a lot of different high schools, actually. But that's kind of where I landed my senior year to move in to prepare for college, and I moved here in 03 and, you know, became a freshman and went all the way through my master's program. I have a master's degree in counseling and human development. And I now have a family. I have three of the girls live with me now. I have five daughters altogether. And we're just a beautiful, blended, blessed family. We just adopted in December a beautiful 16, now she's 17-year-old, Kelsey, and we feel like our family is complete with her. And we, my husband is an equine specialist for Hendrick Home for Children, and I do public speaking with Impact Truth, and I travel all over the nation to share my story. So I'm so glad to be here.
Well, you said a lot right there that I can get into, but one of the things that I want to congratulate you on and maybe talk a little more about it. This past Sunday at church, a lady that has kept probably 65 or 70 children, mainly foster children, mm-hmm. over her lifetime, she walked up to me and she had the young lady that's in the seventh grade that's been with her almost since a baby. Mm-hmm. And she said, "We want to talk with you about something." I said, "Okay, what is it?" She said, "This young lady wants to see how to start a program to adopt older children. And she's in the seventh grade, but she'd still like to be adopted." So, I want to congratulate you on adopting that 16-year-old.
Thank you.
Maybe we could talk about that some more later.
Absolutely.
Yeah, you said that you went to a lot of different high schools.
Yes.
I mean, I'm just sitting here thinking, what would cause most kids to go to that many different high schools? I can think maybe if their dad was a coach, a preacher, or a principal. I say that those guys probably meet at the U-Haul places many times because those Those
are like the typical that come to mind.
Yeah, that you can find yourself. So was that your case?
Or? No, absolutely not. I grew up in and out of foster care. And as a child, I didn't realize that you know, my life was not normal, because you don't know what normal is. You're just raised in an environment, and that's just what you know. So I didn't know that there was no label. I wasn't a foster child, per se. I was just a kid that was moving around a lot. We'd live with kinship placements, relatives, foster families. And when I lived with my birth mother, things would be great for a little while, and she would struggle. My birth father was incarcerated when I was 5, and he had a 20-year sentence. So he ended up not really being a part of any of my life as a child after that. And then my mom really struggled to find her place and her footing after that. As you can imagine, having 4 children and not having a helpmate in life, it's pretty difficult. And so she didn't have healthy coping skills either. And really, her family support system was pretty turbulent as well. So it was a very toxic environment. And when I was just fast forwarding to the high school years, when I was 15 years old, actually 25 years ago, I ended up making a decision to leave the care of my mother on purpose. I became a runaway homeless youth after my birth mother tried to murder me. And after that happened, I just made the decision to leave and not look back. And it was a very difficult decision, but I knew I had to do what was best or I was going to die anyway. You know, that's kind of how it felt. And so I made the decision to leave her care after I walked into her room as well. So that the abuse happened. And then the next day I had walked in and she had a needle in her arm. And I just knew things weren't going to change, because at that point, I thought she was supposed to be clean and sober for 3 months, and she wasn't. And it was really disappointing and disheartening. But I, that day, kind of reached my crossroads. So I packed a little trash bag and I looked at her and said, you know what, I'm leaving and I'm not coming back. And that's a promise. And I don't break my promises. And I left and went to a payphone. If you're under 40, you can Google payphone. Under 30, probably. Google a payphone and find out what that is. But I left and moved into this. I lived on couches for a little while. But then I called a safe place. That's what I want to make very clear. I didn't just run away because I was grounded or I couldn't have Snapchat. I ran away because of abuse. And so I made the decision to leave that environment and to go somewhere healthy. And this lady kind of walked me through the next steps in my journey. And I filed for emancipation and became a legally emancipated adult by the time I was 16. And I worked very hard. Now when I look back, I didn't have as much appreciation for that little girl as I do now. But I worked 3 jobs, and I didn't just couch surf. I didn't just expect, you know, everything handed. I worked hard and went to school and bought a little 2-bedroom trailer for $1,500 and lived by myself in a trailer park. And I worked really hard to grow, you know, and to become who I am now. And I look back now and I'm so proud of her. But it was a very, very hard, hard time.
And you were 16 when you bought the...
Mm-hmm. 16. I bought a 2-bedroom trailer.
Where did that come from? I mean, what even made you think
It's
that
wild.
You could do that?
Well, the lady that I reached out to and called when I ran away, she was actually a gas station clerk down the road from one of the trailers we lived in. And I think it's really important to point out here, it takes a community to help our community members that are suffering, because this lady was kind of my safe place, because I didn't have the numbers of my teachers that I really liked. I didn't have, you know, at that time, we didn't have social media and all that to try to find them either. So I didn't have all of that information. So I called this gas station clerk who I became friends with her daughter earlier on. And anyway, I met her when I was 10. And when I walked into this gas station, my brother and I, we were hungry. And like a lot of kids during the summer, you don't get your meals that you get at school. And so we had some dry beans and some dry rice at home, but I'm pretty sure I burned it or something. I don't know. We walked down to the gas station and we stared at the, we had empty bellies and empty pockets at the time. And we're staring at this little case of fried burritos, and this woman, she looked at us and she's like, "You hungry?" And we both said no. And we were like, "No, we're just looking." And so then we were walking around the store and and then we walk out and have a nice day. And we walk out. And then I asked my brother, I said, "Why didn't you tell her we were hungry?" And he goes, "Well, why didn't you tell her we were hungry?" Power of vulnerability here. You have to actually tell people if you want their help, what you're going through. And so I said, "Well, let's go back in." And he's like, "Yeah." So we walked back in and we stood back at the counter and we're looking at these little fried burritos again. And she said, hoping for a second chance. And I like to say, you don't always get the second chance. So sometimes you have to go, "You know what? Remember that time you asked if we were hungry? We're hungry." But we didn't have to do that, because she goes, "Are you hungry?" And we said, "Well," and my brother looked at her and he said, "We ain't got no money." And she said, "Well, do you know how to sweep a floor?" And we said, "We can sweep a floor." So we swept the floor and eventually worked our way up to stocking drinks and, stocking things in the store. So from a young age, from that age of 10, my brother was only 10 months older than me. So he was either 10 or 11. But from the age of 10, we learned the value of work and work ethic. And because this lady was feeding us, we were able to earn our own food. So it's not, we knew, if I can work, I can earn my food,
Right.
And so we started doing that. And I'm pretty sure we were the gas station manager, neighborhood kids gas station manager at some point. But she even let me start working the cash register as I grew a little bit. So, we developed that relationship. And even no matter where I moved to, she always lived in the same house. And so I always knew I could go back to that house on North Cummings Street in Alvarado and I could find her. And so I went back there. I actually had called her because she also kept her number. And back then we had to memorize numbers.
Oh, right. Yeah.
And so I called her and really, truly, she's the one that took me when I was 13 to the Winn-Dixie to apply for my first job. And, you can work at 13, but you can only work so many hours. And so she's the one that gave me rides to that job. No matter where I was, I would call and she would say, "I'll come get you." And she would take me to my job. But she helped me learn how to fill out an application. She helped me learn how to, build something with my life. And I attribute anything that I gained work ethic wise on, "Well, how did you know you could do that?" I knew, because at 10 years old, I learned that I could work and eat. And it was from somebody healthy, not from somebody trying to take advantage of or exploit a child. So, I feel very blessed and fortunate to be able to have learned that lesson. Because now whenever I travel and speak to youth, I'm like, you can work and work hard. And it may not be the most money in the world right now, but that's okay. Save what you get, and I teach them the value of the penny. Save your money. And eventually, if you need that two-bedroom trailer in that trailer park, you'll be able to get it, Now, I don't want kids to go through that, for sure.
What was that lady's name?
Her name was Lynn Ham. And she now lives in Florida. Her daughter lives there as well. And she's just an incredible source of light in my life. When things were dark, she taught me that, you can do this. She actually encouraged me. Because I didn't want to go back into foster care, she encouraged me to seek an attorney. And that's not the journey I recommend to everybody, but at the time, that was what needed to happen in my life. And I knew that I could do it because I, worked already before. So I'd been working since I was 10 and then 13 officially. And then I was hired at the Chamber of Commerce by a man named Greg Solomon, my freshman year in high school, in the summertime. And he kept me all the way through my senior year, no matter where I lived. If I wanted to come work, he's like, "Come on, the door's open." He created a fake position for me. It was called the Junior Chamber Secretary. And I got to go work. And I loved my work community because they became family when family became very toxic and unbearable. And so that's really what.
Oh, you know, it's a small world. First, I just want to say God bless Miss Lynn. Mm-hmm. But Greg Solomon actually came and spoke at one of our Black Chamber of Commerce meetings.
He did.
Yes, yes, yes. He.
Oh my gosh.
Yes, it's a small world. But
his family's from here. He went to Hardin Simmons as well. Yeah.
Yes, I was friends with his dad. Yes, I sure.
What a sweet, sweet man. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow, that it is a small world because that was all the way in Burleson. He gave me a start at my first professional job.
What did? Tell me a little bit about that trail of standing that trail of by yourself. What did you think about?
Oh, goodness. It was lonely. It was lonely. I struggled for sure. I wanted relationship. And really, when I filed for emancipation and I'm standing in front of a judge, I wanted my birth mom to come get me. I wanted her to want to better her life for me. And for a while, I felt like I was unworthy. I felt like, you know, if your own mom doesn't want you or your own dad or they can't get their life together for the sake of their family, why would anybody? You know, so I really struggled during that time. But I struggled really internally. While I was there, though, thankfully, I did have work. I worked three jobs. I worked at the Chamber of Commerce. I worked at IHOP and I worked at Kmart. And so I worked those three jobs. They'd all work with my schedule. And I was able to really build, build from there. But while I lived in that trailer, it was hard. It was very hard, very lonely. And some of the people that came into my life were not great people, tried to pull me down, you know, introduced me to alcohol or introduce me to things. And I didn't want anything to do with that life. So I had to constantly, you know, kids would try to come to my house because I didn't have parents, you know. So there was a lot of that. And I just, it's really sad, you know, but I just tried to stay focused. My grades weren't really as important. I didn't, you know what a GPA was or anything like that. But I tried to just stay focused. My goals, I had three goals. I never wanted to be homeless again. I did not want to become an addict. And I wanted to graduate from high school. And those were my three goals. And I'm proud to say now that I've shattered the glass ceiling and done greater things than I ever thought I could. And to your listeners, if there are things that you want to do, go for it. Go for it. Shatter the glass ceiling. But those were my three goals at the time. And it was important that I stuck to those goals. And living in that trailer, it was hard to do that. But I knew if I want to be out of this trailer one day, I got to keep going. I got to stick with my goals.
Well, I want to circle back a little bit because basically you found yourself in a fight or flight situation. You said your mom tried to kill you. Mm-hmm. What was that about?
Yes. So I walked in one day and my brother had already gone to live with his girlfriend and my other two siblings were given up for adoption. And so I was kind of the last one at home. And I ended up walking in one day and my birth mother was really just struggling. She had a mental illness. She was bipolar and schizophrenic and a lot of times went unmedicated. And so, and I always say, you know, if you have mental illness, please go get the help you need because you can really, really alter other people's lives forever and your own. Unfortunately, she wasn't getting the mental health help that she needed. And she ended up self-medicating with, you know, addiction. And that caused another, you know, problem. But I believe the schizophrenia and I'm not really sure what caused her to come at me, but she just came after me and she strangled me and threw me in a chair and you know, asked me, she said, "Are you ready to die tonight?" And she said that three times with the coldest, darkest eyes. And I remember fighting. I just started fighting for my life. And I don't know. I don't know why she did that. She tried to throw me off of the balcony. We lived in a government-funded apartment in Cleburne. And as she's pushing me, I'm holding on to this little rail, trying not to go over. And eventually, she stopped fighting me. Like, she stopped attempting to throw me over, and she pulled me by my hair into the room and just said, you need to think about why you deserve to live. And I don't know why. I cannot explain why anybody would do that. But the only conclusion I have is she was self-medicating in the wrong way. And that's not who she wanted to be. That's not who she, you know, when she was having a great day, like her good days were good days. She had the potential to be an excellent mom. She just was struggling. And I think with being a single mom and not getting the help, and I know it's like, well, how do you get the help? I'm trying to figure that out too, because it's hard. Our system is kind of messed up in that area. We need more help out there for people. But I will tell you, making a commitment to not use drugs or alcohol, that's number one. maybe make a commitment to yourself that you'll face your fear, face your pain, face your anxiety, face your you know, feelings of unworthiness. And she felt a lot of that because of her own trauma growing up. She gave up on the life she wanted. She told me when I interviewed her a while back, a couple years ago, she said, I always wanted to be a marine biologist. And it made me sad because I didn't know that about her. And I said, why didn't you? And she said, because I was told that I was too stupid. And she believed that lie. Mm-hmm. And I like to imagine what would have happened if she didn't believe that lie. Because she's not. I think it's like that quote goes, you know, everyone is a genius, but if you judge a fish by its ability to climb a tree, it will live its entire life feeling stupid. And I think she just listened to the wrong people.
Right. So it's never good to want to murder somebody, but I think what you've just heard is that sometimes people have mental illnesses. They have challenges. And so maybe where we would say that's definitely not an excuse to,
right,
to kill somebody. For us to standing on the sideline watching, mm-hmm, if we can coax those people in the right direction, obviously she needed help.
Absolutely. And if you know somebody like that, I think some of the ways to help, I created a nonprofit called Simply Encourage. It's slowly building. It's brand new here, but it's because I want to encourage people. And, you know, mental health help can be very costly. I know that. It's very difficult, but there are coaches out there. There are people out there who want to help. You just have to ask for help. And there's a lot of programs that are free that our community can take advantage of. Regional Victims Crisis Center, NOAA Project, you know, all of those places that work with families of domestic violence, because that's what I was in. I was in a situation where I was, abused. And, you know, there are organizations out there to help. And, you know, yes, she needed help. And I think one of the ways to help is to non-judgmental. We need to be non-judgmental. I am not angry with her. I don't hold any bitterness or, you know, there are certain days where, yeah, I might cry about it. I might struggle with what I lost that day. You know, that hope of that relationship with your mother. But I gained so much as well. I gained perspective and empathy and compassion for those who are currently going through those types of pains. I know how to work with them because I was that kid. And so, you know, and the moms that I've worked with, I teach them to have grace for themselves.
Wow, that's wonderful. Tell me a little bit about your book, Always Forever. It's a children's book. What is it about?
Yes, this book actually came from all of the things we're talking about. When I gave birth to my daughter, as I was holding her, I went through postpartum depression, pretty rough. And I believed that I was not going to be good enough for her. I read a book, the one that says, I'll love you forever, I'll like you for always, as long as I'm living, my baby you'll be. I read that book. I was given that book for her baby shower. And so I read it to her, and I had no idea it would be so triggering, but it triggered me. And as I'm holding her, I'm just like, why didn't I have that? You know, it's because the story is a mother's love for her child from birth all the way till she passes. And it's like this intense love. And she's like, even when things are hard, I love you. And it's that always forever kind of love. And I remember I self-loathed for about 3 months. And I'm not making light of postpartum depression. But for me personally, I was just in that battle of, you know, you're not good enough. Why, you know, so, but, and that's not, that doesn't serve my child, you know? So at some point I have to wake up. And so I, as I'm staring at my daughter one day, I said, you know, what about instead of focusing on the things I didn't have, I need to focus on the things I did have. And I had people telling me they loved me in a very pure, loving kind of way. I had teachers that called me their baby. My teachers were like, you know, some people use that as a term of endearment. You know, you're my baby. Come here, baby.
Right.
You know, and I had teachers that called me their baby. And I'm like, I had it. It just wasn't from a mom or dad. And so one day, as I was kind of processing, I made up my own lullaby for my daughters. And I realized, you know, what about the kids like me? My husband said, it needs to be a book. Your experience needs to be a book. And so I said, yeah, what about those kids? What about the ones who are told I love you, but it's from foster parents or from, you know, other people pouring into their life as well as their parents, you know, grandparents, anybody raising children that are not their own, you're doing the best you can to love these kids. What about those kids, you know? And so I wrote this book. It's a very simple bedtime story. And it's a simple message, you know, wherever you go, near or far, I will love you always forever. And it doesn't say the words mom or dad. It has children from different races and ethnicities. It has girls and boys, and it could be an aunt or an uncle, or it could be a mom or dad. It doesn't have to be, the nuclear family, but it can just be that message of unconditional love, always forever kind of love, from an adult, a caring adult, to a child, in hopes that that will help them see that they are valued, that they are loved. You know, it's that message I felt like I needed, that I did receive, but I had to think really hard to find it. And so, you know, in that, there's a heart search in the book too. The hearts are, some are really hard to find and some are easy. And the purpose for that was whoever's reading the book with the child, that they will talk to them and they'll say, you know, there might be points in your life where you don't feel loved, but I want you to know you can never say that you're not, because I love you. And so that's the purpose of Always Forever. It's just to help kids, has a place in the back where you can write a letter to them and it can be passed to them when they move off to college or go into the next, you know, technical school or the, you know, the professional world that they're transitioning into adulthood. My hope is that it will be passed to them, that they will never forget that someone loved them.
This has been a great interview. I think I have maybe one more question as we wrap it up. Let's say that there's a young person that's where you once were, and they are hearing this, and they really want to believe it. They want to hang on to it, but they're just not quite there yet. What might you say to that young man or woman that's wanting to be like you one day?
You know, it's really easy in life to build up walls. When people hurt us or if we've gone through hard things, it's really easy to throw vulnerability in the trash and build up a wall and not let people in. But there are people in this world that are awful, and there are also people in this world who are loving and kind and good. And I just always recommend, look for the people who are good. Look for the people who are encouraging you and building you up, not afraid to apologize when they've done something wrong, but also they're saying, hey, I'm here if you need me. Look for, you know, someone safe to talk to. There are youth drop-in centers all over. We have one here in Abilene called Youth Voice. We have places where teens and kids can go. But I want you to think about one thing. When you're 40, like me, what do you want to be able to tell your younger self? And I encourage you to tell your younger self, I encourage you to go through a journey to where you can look back and say, I am so proud that you didn't give up. I'm so proud that you looked for healthy people and healthy relationships. I'm so proud that in that moment where you made a mistake, you immediately turned it around and said, you know what? I got to fix this. Those are the moments that I want you to realize when you can learn from your mistakes and you don't hold on to what people do to you, but you use that as a life lesson to move forward. I promise you good things will come. Bad things are coming too, because life is hard. But hold on to the good moments and don't give up. Look back and tell yourself, if you're thinking about what you want to be in your future, be the kind of person that can look back and say, I'm really proud of you.
Okay, do you have an email or website or phone number or something that if somebody wanted to write you, get in contact with you?
Yes. So impacttruth.com is the company I work with in my speaking. So you can definitely go on there and find my little speaking profile and find me there. My email is simplyencourage@gmail.com. And you can email me there. And I'm on social media, Stephanie Ellison. I try to be there for people. So if any of you, I am a safe place, you know. So if you need someone to talk to or need help getting to a safe person, that's something I do. I advocate all the time. Find someone safe because that's really important. Really important. So.
Well, Stephanie, thank you very much. I think that this will help a lot of people.
You're welcome.
God bless you as you continue your journey.
Thank you so much. I appreciate you.
It's Everything West Texas is a production of KACU and is sponsored by the West Texas Tribune and Floyd Miller Investments. Securities and investment advisory services offered through FSC Securities Corporation, member FINRA SIPC. FSC is separately owned and other entities and or marketing names, products or services referenced here are independent of FSC. Floyd Miller can be reached at 3300 South 14th Street, Suite 100 in Abilene, Texas, 325-676-0138. I'm Floyd Miller, your host. Subscribe today.